Good morning. My name is Adam Schurz, and I'd encourage you to find the spot on the back of your bulletin for some notes, and you'll see there a little image that we'll use as a guide for us a little bit later on as we respond in worship today. I'm glad to be back with you. Last week I was in Fort Lauderdale. I've heard some people say that their kids were down there too, and that they used that against them and said, hey, you got to behave in Fort Lauderdale in spring break because the pastor's down there. And, you know, they were worried about how they were acting around the pastor. And it's funny because when I go down on vacation like that, I think the exact opposite. I hope that nobody from church sees me so that I don't get in trouble. Went to Nashville one night, and like at 8:15 service, someone said, I heard you were partying in Nashville last night. I'm like, well, I went to listen to Martha play music, so I guess you can't do anything without getting somebody's around to watch. So all that to say, it's good to be back with you as we continue a series called I Witness. And the sort of framework for this series is that we're looking at the events of Jesus's crucifixion through the eyes of people who were there. So all the stories we're telling are really in that part of the Bible, the end of the Gospels, as they tell the story of Jesus going to the cross, and then all that came around that. And we're looking through the eyes, not just of any people, but of the lesser known players in the events. Some of the stories that we're going to tell are about people that you may not have heard of or know very little about. And hopefully that will help us just see that story from a different perspective, to see through the eyes of people who were there who had a unique perspective. And I hope that you'll learn some things along the way. If you've heard this story before, that you will hear some things that you didn't know. But most importantly, I hope it will help us see what God is doing, not just then, but now from a different perspective. So not just the stories that happened, but the story that is happening. And not just for them, for those people, but for each of us. And hopefully that different perspective, that different vantage point, will help you understand the cross and Jesus and what it all means in a different way. So today we're going to look at a rather minor character. In fact, this man gets one verse in three of the Gospels. So all in total, there are three verses of the Bible that speak about this person. And we might think that that means that the impact is minor, but I think, in fact, it might actually be one of the people we could relate to the most in the Bible who has a very unique perspective and someone we could learn from, someone who does in the Bible what no one else did. And this person is Simon of Cyrene. The fact that Simon was from Cyrene and the fact that he was at the crucifixion, just from one little verse, we already begin to learn some things. So this is in Jerusalem, but Cyrene, where Simon was from, is a long way away. I want to put a map on the screen where you can see that. And there at the bottom in the center is the north part of Africa, and that is where Cyrene is, down here at the bottom. And then if you go to the right, you see Alexandria, so you can see that Egypt is coming up as you go east. And then as you go up the Mediterranean and then you look to the right, you see Jerusalem and Palestine and the Holy Land. 4 or 5 years ago, I was visiting my brother. He was living near Miami at the time, and we went out to the Florida Everglades. They have a park where you can ride a bike, and they thought this would be a great idea. We would ride a bike out to a watchtower and go up and look around the glades and then ride back. Well, the watchtower is pretty uneventful because it's just, you know, swamps, right? Not much to see. What maybe was a little more exciting was that along the path, every 100 yards or so was a large alligator, and some of them looked fat, and I didn't know if the whole biking down the trail thing, like you just want to make sure your biking skills are up to par and you're not going to fall over, because it seemed like those little signs that said don't feed the alligators were applying especially, you know, true to us. There was not much to see except that maybe the alligators. And I was out in the middle of the glades, and I thought, I wonder how far I am from home, because I feel like I'm a million miles from nowhere. So I got my phone out, and when I got back to the parking lot, there was enough reception to see that I was almost exactly 1,000 miles away from Bowling Green. So that's how far we're talking about 1,000 miles from Cyrene to Jerusalem. Now, you can imagine how we get to Miami. Some of us would fly. Some of us would drive a car. Not many of us have been on foot or by camel caravan. So it would take a while. You have to want to get there. It's like a lot of places where some of us are from. You have to mean to be there if you're going to be there. And Simon of Cyrene meant to be in Jerusalem at this point, most likely because of his faith. He was most likely a Jew who lived as part of the Jewish diaspora. The Jewish people had been spread throughout the known world, and about as far away as you could be, Simon lived in another place. And so he was coming to Jerusalem on a religious pilgrimage. Now he was a pilgrim. That doesn't mean that he had one of those tall black buckle hats and ate turkey. It meant that he went to Jerusalem as part of his faith and part of his attention to the law, which called for faithful Jewish men and families to return to Jerusalem. And this was written when everybody lived kind of close. So now that people were spread out and you had to really take this stuff seriously, three festivals where you could were invited to come back to Jerusalem. And one of those was the Passover, which is why Simon was likely there, so that you could really reenact, live into, get in touch with the story that's being told in the Passover, which is the story from the Old Testament of how God's people were slaves in Egypt, and God caused the angel of death to pass over the houses of the slaves in Egypt, and finally the Pharaoh got the message that Moses had been saying to let his people go, and that's when the people were freed from slavery in Egypt. It was the way that the people reenacted the story. The Passover and coming back to Jerusalem specifically was to come and really get in touch with that story, to live it out, and to stay in touch with the truth of the story that God had saved them. This is how they did it. And so Simon apparently took that seriously. He came from a very far distance to be present so that he could stay in touch with what God was doing. He could have had probably no idea how much he would come in contact with that story of salvation. Now, Simon also lived in a clash of cultures, and this is something that I think we can relate to. In the Roman Empire, the people of Cyrene were complex and diverse, and there was a community of Jewish people living there, but a lot of other kinds of folks. It was near the town of Shahat, Libya now, so this is modern-day Libya. But it's not the desert part. It's up along the coast, as you could see in the map. And it was protected, so it was an agricultural area. It was a place of commerce and a place of sort of growth economically, but also just agriculturally. And was known for a medicinal plant that was exported from there, which was on the coin from Cyrene. More specifically, it was known for being a place where people would go. It was called the Athens of Egypt Athens of Africa. And people would go there if you were a philosopher or a mathematician or a thinker, many people, almost like a resort town, but a place that attracted folks. And so there was actually a school of philosophy there. And Aristippus of Cyrene was known for his claim that the goal of life was to seek pleasure or to sort of find your own gratification or purpose and to maintain control over your life. It's not too much bad, not too much good, but to stay in control. So that sort of culture of the Roman Empire was alive and well, and philosophy and all that came with it. So the idea of seeking pleasure and control was the purpose of life, was a way of thinking. There was a clash of cultures because Simon was from Cyrene, but home, if you are a Jew, wherever you are in the world, is really Jerusalem. And so he had grown up also knowing the story of Moses that we've already described, but all the way back to Abraham and God calling Abraham to be his person in the world, to bless Abraham so that the people of God could be a blessing to the rest of the world, so that the people of God could be called out and be special and unique. And as they come out of slavery and into the promised land, live out God's ways in the world. And Jerusalem was the symbol of that. So if Simon was coming from a world that was about seeking pleasure and control, he was going on a pilgrimage to a world that taught, and a philosophy that taught, that it wasn't about pleasure and control, but love and justice. That the way of life was not looking to yourself for fulfillment, but looking to God and living in right relationship with God, you find the right way to live. And he again went to Jerusalem to be in touch with that story. He, like the disciples, as we tell the story at Easter and every time we have communion, was in the upper room, probably an upper room, a place to gather around the Passover story. And just like the disciples and Jesus gathered on Thursday night, Simon also probably gathered with people that he was close to reenact that story. Friday morning, the sun comes up, and you're in Jerusalem, and you're a pilgrim, you're a tourist. Anybody who's been to the Holy Land, this is what you do. You get up, and you start looking at the sights. You go and visit, and just almost as a tourist sightsee. And that's where we pick up the story, where Simon is watching as a progression of Roman soldiers and then criminals comes through town. And these people were progressed through town, processed through town so that they could be made a spectacle of. And it sort of just kind of draws you in. And Simon, out of curiosity, goes and he looks to see what's going on. That's where we pick up the story in Matthew 15:2. Two of the Gospels are almost identical in the way they say this. And the soldiers compelled a passerby, Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country, the father of Alexander and Rufus, who we believe actually were probably people who lived and maybe even referenced by the Apostle Paul in Acts, on so that they could testify that their dad had been part of this story. And they compelled that passerby, Simon of Cyrene, to carry Jesus' cross. It's one verse. It's repeated in a couple other of the Gospels as they each tell the passion story. And yet, the sort of feeling that might be minor out of one verse, I think, might not be true, that this may be more major than we realize. Because as we're thinking about this, if the point is for us to see the cross from different perspectives, then Simon of Cyrene had a very unique perspective. He saw the cross from over his shoulder. He carried the cross on his own back. He and Jesus were the ones that felt the weight of it. He carried Jesus' cross. And I think that perspective might teach us some things, that we might relate to Simon of Cyrene even in some ways more than we do Jesus, who carried the cross, because Simon's kind of like us and got pulled into the stories and story in ways that he didn't expect. So I want to give you two ways of thinking about how this story might relate to your story today and what it might mean for you to live out of that story. So the first thing that I think that Simon of Cyrene might teach us is that we are never really bystanders in the story of God. I don't know about you, but sometimes when I read the Bible, I have not been to the Holy Land. I have not been to those places. And then all those names that are in there, it's sort of like so-and-so begot so-and-so is the way the King James would say it. And like so-and-so gave birth to so-and-so and they gave birth to so-and-so. And the names are hard and it's hard to pronounce. It does feel like a million miles away. And then the places we just don't have a point of reference for. So we might know where a little spot in Muhlenberg County is in Kentucky. But if you pick any of those names from the Bible, we don't know much about that place. And so it feels distant. And sometimes I just gloss over those and rush on and try to get to the parts that are a little meatier that might make more sense. But every once in a while, I'm reminded that the story that's happening is not something that happened just then in a place that's far away, but it's something that's happening now and actually much closer than I sometimes realize. And Simon helps us see that. He kind of had that experience. He came to Jerusalem almost as an outsider, almost knowing the stories, but from a distance. And then somehow, almost instantaneously, he's brought smack dab in the middle of the story itself, up close and personal. Jesus actually used this as a way of talking about what it means to be part of God's story. He used carrying a cross as a metaphor of what it means to be part of what God's doing. And that's in Matthew 16, verse 24. He says, if anyone wants to become my follower, and I would guess that maybe there are some people in this room who would fit that category, who are at least here because we're curious, if not because we've said yes to this very thing. If anyone wants to become my follower, then let them deny themselves, which begins to sound very different than that Roman philosophy that we just heard about. Let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. And you can imagine that the first people who heard Jesus say that had to wonder what in the world he was talking about. What does it mean to take up your cross and follow somebody? And since then, I think we've also wondered, what does it mean to do that? Like this term, to take up your cross, or like we use it more popularly, to bear a cross. So this is my cross to bear. And sometimes we talk about like really annoying things that we just can't get rid of, and like, you know, like mother-in-laws, like, you know, my mother-in-law is just my cross to bear. My mother-in-law is not my cross to bear, and she's present in the room, so that's not my experience at all. But some of us will talk like this, right? Like, what does it mean to carry a cross or have a cross to bear? Like, is it just that this annoying thing that you just have to deal with, like a little like thorn in the side or burr in the saddle? But Jesus, I think, is talking about something more than that. And so he continues, "For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their lives for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life?" That whole idea that life is about sort of getting what we need to out of it for ourselves, primarily, and enjoying ourselves along the way and trying to sort of keep things under control, that's not just old, that's out there still, and we still hear that philosophy. Jesus seems to speak against that and go and really point to just the opposite. And carrying a cross is a metaphor for that. It's a way of thinking about that. And so what does it mean to carry your cross? Well, I think Simon of Cyrene tells us something almost so obvious that we would miss it, is that you can't carry a cross from a distance. There's no way for you to be a bystander in the story of God, not just the story that happened, but the story that is happening. There's no way to understand that from a distance and kind of hold it at bay and kind of get it from a distance and get it maybe intellectually. The only way this makes sense is up close and personal. That's what carrying a cross means, is that you're going to be impacted. You're going to be brought in. You're going to be tapped on the shoulder in a very similar way to the man who actually carried Jesus' cross. Some point at some juncture along the road, that's going to happen for each one of us, and we'll have a choice to make. We can't hold it at a distance. We can't intellectualize it. I think sometimes, because I spent 4 years in college and 3 years in seminary with my nose in a book learning about all these concepts, and I think, man, they should have just sent me to sleep with homeless folks like we do here at Broadway. Or we should have had a class where we just spent our time with poor people. Because all that book learning is good, but there is a place in which that can be externalized and intellectualized, and we can understand it and talk about theological concepts and act like we understand it, and it stays up here and never gets in here. And carrying a cross just kind of doesn't allow that. We can't talk about things intellectually or as we sometimes do theologically and hold God at bay. Why is there suffering in the world? And we have doctrines and discussions and intellectual conversations about that. But those in some ways are just a ploy, a way of holding all of that at bay. And so what I always say is, when we have big intellectual hang-ups with God, I think they're almost always heart hang-ups with God. So intellectualizing is not going to work. We do this with people. We do it relationally too. We kind of hold people at bay because people are painful at times. And loving people is hard, and sometimes it's just easier to kind of keep people at a distance, because when they get close, they hurt us, or they call things from us, and they challenge us, and we don't know how to wrestle through it. And so it's easier just to kind of just not do that, just to hold people at bay. But carrying a cross doesn't allow that either, I don't think. The love that Jesus had was more suffering-oriented than that. And love always suffers, right? That's just what it means. Anybody who's been in a relationship, anybody who's been married knows that to love is to suffer. Anybody who's raised children knows that it's the way it works, is to love is to suffer, because people are hard. I went to one of those classes in seminary, a Greek class, some of that more of that book learning that I did, and I went into class the first day, and the teacher walked up to the board, and she wrote on the board, "To learn is to suffer. That is not a good way to start." This is not going to be fun. That's how Jesus started. To love is to suffer, and we might as well be honest about it, and also recognize it's the only way to live. We're never bystanders in the life and death drama, the good and evil being played out in the world. We can talk about it, we can try to hold it at bay, but at some point it's going to come home, it's going to come close, and that's when we'll have a decision to make. What will we do with it? And sometimes that will feel like the experience of saying, that's just not right. Like, you know, when you look at something and you kind of become aware of something, you think, that shouldn't be that way. When that happens, listen up, because that might be God calling you to carry a cross. Or when we experience hurt and pain in the circumstances or relationships of life, and we think, why does it have to be this way? And very internally kind of struggle. Pay attention, because that might be the place where you're gonna find your cross. Any way in which the relationships or circumstances of your life get you in touch with the sinful and broken world that we're a part of helps you understand you can't be a bystander in this deal. We can't just hold the story at bay. It's gonna come closer than that. Because we're all born into the deal. We are implicated by our birth. We're all sinful, so we're all part of the problem. And yet we're all created in the image of God. And so also called every single one of us to be part of God's solution. Several years ago, someone in our family suffered through several miscarriages. And it was a painful time for them and for all of us. And I remember Jenny's mom, who is my mother-in-law, by the way, saying, this is where it gets real. This is where your faith is going to get real. This is where all those Sunday school classes and youth group studies and mission trips and youth musicals, all that, going to church and hearing this story, this is where it gets real. This is where faith starts to be a foundation on which you're going to build your life. And I think that's how it happens for a lot of us. At some point, this gets real for us. We get a taste of the suffering and pain around us, and we figure out for ourselves, we have to figure out for ourselves where God and faith and our purpose in all of it can be found. 15 years ago, Jenny and I went to a concert. It was a Stephen Curtis Chapman concert. Anybody here like Stephen Curtis Chapman? Yeah, when we start Christmas, the Stephen Curtis Chapman Christmas album is like the tree has not been set up at our house without that music in the background in 20 years of marriage. And we used to joke, because I think my wife loved Stephen Curtis Chapman's music, but we also joked that she maybe loved Stephen Curtis Chapman. And that was like one of the little jokes early on in our marriage, and she kind of made it clear in the prenup that if he ever asked her to be a backup singer for him, she would gone. And I just needed to understand that. So we would joke about that, and we went to his concert about 15 years ago, sort of in that frame of mind, knowing music, the music, and loving what he did and the worship part of it, for sure. Went to the concert, and about the intermission, Stephen Curtis Chapman got up and started telling, he and his wife started telling their story of how they had been called to adoption. And they started talking about that story. And Jenny and I went to that concert for the music, and we left with a calling. As we became more aware of the reality of orphans in the world, it wasn't like there were like bright lights or anything. It's just like, well, maybe God is calling us to do that, to adopt. And so, of course, we did. And that, it's hard to describe that as a cross to bear, but there have been times where it's felt like it. When we were raising the money for the adoption, and I thought, there's no way we're going to be able to do this. It sometimes felt more like a burden than an opportunity. And when, of course, you're raising children and changing diapers and all those things that come with that, the romanticized sort of view left pretty quick. But that concert gave us a calling. That's sometimes how it works. Several years ago, Pastor Laura went to Seminary Chapel and heard a presentation on human trafficking and people who were ministering to people, women and children and men who were sold for sex or work. And it just pierced her heart, which set her up for some years later here at Broadway. This is before I think she came to Broadway, but here when some of our United Methodist women became aware of the reality of human trafficking. And then a survivor of human trafficking came to be part of our community together, and Phoenix Rising was born. This is how it sometimes happens, but it usually doesn't actually happen, I think, in such sort of grand and big ways. Most often, for most of us, it happens in very humble ways, where we just get in touch with the suffering within our families. The challenge it is to love our husband or our wife, the challenge that it is to love our children. And then we have to decide what to do with that. When we say, this is not really what I thought I signed up for. This is not as easy as I thought it was going to be. That's where we are given a cross, which leads to the second point, the last point, which is usually we don't get to choose the crosses we're asked to bear. Usually we don't choose the cross that we are asked to bear. It chooses us. And I think that flies in the face of like kindergarten or preschool when people say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the whole philosophy is more like that Roman philosophy that it's like comes out of you and it's like out of self-fulfillment. And of course there's some to that, but it's like it's totally about you and for you and individual. And you get to decide it. And you can be anything you want to be. That's just not true, is it? The message is that we choose our calling and it's sort of independent within us. And I think it's more true to say that our callings choose us. We don't usually get to choose the cross that we're asked to bear. We do get to choose whether we will bear it and how. It happens when we see something and say it's not right. It happens when we feel hurt deeply and struggle to understand. It happens when the circumstances of our lives hand us something that we never would have chosen. What is your cross to bear? What would you fill in the blank? As you think of this cross, and this is how we're going to start to maybe live into the message today, just you might write a word up there. You might write something in the cross. What is your cross to bear? And if it's your mother-in-law, that's fine, but I'm guessing that probably for most of us, it's something that gets to the core of who we are. It has as much to do with our calling in life as it does with putting up with things that we don't like. What is your cross to bear? What are you being asked to do in the way of Jesus? Much like Simon of Cyrene, who was tapped on the shoulder. And the wording in those three little verses in the Bible are, it's interesting because two of those passages, the one in Mark and the one in Matthew, say that Simon was compelled to carry the cross. That's the word, compelled. And the other account says that he was seized and forced to carry the cross. What is the thing that's compelled you? The thing that you probably wouldn't have chosen? The thing that we talk about in the serenity prayer, to accept the things I can't change and the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference. And then the phrase, living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as the pathway of peace and taking, as Jesus did, this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it. What is the cross that you've been asked to bear? The thing that you didn't choose but nevertheless has chosen you. Johnny Erickson Tada is a Christian leader and speaker. Some of you will recognize her name from her radio program on Christian radio. And her story is that as a young adult, she had an accident and broke her neck and has been paralyzed most of her life. And one way of thinking has been forced to live in a wheelchair. And so I go to her because I think she's somebody who has some street cred, somebody who's been there and who has reflected on this very thing. What does it mean to take up your cross in the way that we're talking about today? And so listen to what she says. She says, well, I think the answer to that question can be found in the cross of Christ. Because when he took up his cross, he was taking on the sins of the world. He was bearing our transgressions. He was willing to be nailed to the cross and die for our sins, which is that whole thing we've been talking about. God himself could not hold us at bay, but came close by his choice. He was willing to be nailed to the cross and die for our sins. And that right there helps shape our view of what it should mean to take up our cross daily. It basically means to die to the sins that Jesus died for on the cross. In other words, my cross to bear is not my wheelchair. It's my rotten attitude about my wheelchair. It's the fear and anxiety, the anger I sometimes have when everything about my disability seems to go wrong at once. It's the occasional doubts I have about God being in control. These are the things I must die to. Because these are the sins Christ died for. So when I take up my cross daily, I choose to be like Jesus. I want to die to sin and live for God. I want to put behind me the fear and worry that my wheelchair often reveals about me. In a way, it makes me grateful for this chair. Isn't that amazing? Because this wheelchair reveals the stuff I need to confess. It's the instrument of my sanctification every day, and for that I'm thankful. So she concludes, friends, your cross to bear is not your boring job, your aching back, or your irksome mother-in-law. Your cross to bear is your daily putting to death of your attitude about your boring job, or your exasperating mother-in-law, or your aching muscles, or fill in the blank. And this means that you can rejoice in your suffering in the way the Bible talks about. Why? Because it gets you engaged in your own transformation each and every day. It happens every day when you take up your cross and you follow. But she describes that whole dying to some things so that you can live for others is, I think, at the core of what it means to do what Jesus asked, to take up our cross and follow him. There are things that we're going to have to give up so that there can be other things that we take up. And those, I think, are the way to understand. I'm going to put on the screen the two blanks around your cross. Let's go to the cross image. On one side, you could write the words give up, and the other side, write the words take up. And I'm going to invite you to do that in just a second, to think of what it would mean to give up some things, to die to some things. And that's sometimes very painful and hard, so that you can take up others. That's the way of carrying the cross that follows in the way of Jesus. And I want to make that personal. For me, it has meant in the process of serving as a pastor and as a husband and as a brother and as a son. And I think this is, you know, as we're each kind of in it, and as God is working through us, some things get revealed about us. We learn some things about ourselves. The things that we didn't maybe know that were there. The way that we are trying to make life about me and we're selfish. Or the ways that we're trying to be in control. That we're trying to maintain order and control circumstances or people. For me, those both have been a journey of discovery. And I think God actually gave me the word control for 2017, oddly enough, I don't know where it came from, to say this is something you can let go so that you can trust more. A few years ago, I did a year of coaching intentionally with someone in the community, and we sat down and very quickly learned that one of my issues was perfectionism. And perfectionism is mostly worrying about how good you do in other people's eyes rather than how good you actually are, and is more concerned about what other people think than about helping other people. And I didn't realize that was an issue for me, so I put perfectionism on my list, and I've had to realize when I'm doing that's something I want to give up so that I can take up other things. So perfectionism, control, I think for a lot of us, fear of the future, anxiety. What we learn as we carry our cross is that all those things get in the way of being able to trust God, to give God control, to care mostly about what God thinks, and simply to be available to God to love in his name. So you've got things on your list that are specific to you that you would want to give up. In a second, I'm going to give you a chance just to write two or three words and to make that just a time of spiritual reflection so that you can take up. And the take-up part has to do with carrying your cross toward the suffering that Jesus walked to. It has to do with our own calling and that every single one of us has. When we decide we're going to let this in and not hold God at bay and say, okay, what is in this for me and what are you asking of me? And we give up control and learn to trust and start to follow. Then it gets very specific, I think. The ways in which, as it's been said, your calling is found is that your deep gladness meets the world's great need. Or your experiences and the circumstances of your life, and some of it that's not what you would have chosen, become your opportunity to serve. Your mess becomes your ministry. You get to take up some things and follow Jesus and live like Jesus in a servant orientation in the world. So each of us would easily, I think, have two or three or four things, maybe five or six or seven for me, that I need to give up, and then some things that we need to take up. So let me invite you to a moment of reflection on your bulletin to write those words. And I'm going to invite Martha forward. We're just going to take this next song and a few moments to do what Paul describes in Galatians 2:20. And I know I skipped around, Alex. You're doing great. To go back to that Galatians 2:20 scripture. And as we prepare to reflect, let's say these words together on the screen. I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh or in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. Let's pray and reflect together.
Sorrow and night, Jesus, I come, Jesus, I come into thy freedom, gladness and light, Jesus, I come to thee. Out of my sickness and into thy health, to thy wealth, out of my sin and into thyself, Jesus, I come to thee. Jesus, I come into the glorious gain of thy cross. Jesus, I come to thee. Out of our sorrows and into thy balm, out of life's storms and into thy calm, out of distress into jubilant song, Jesus, I come to Jesus, I come, Jesus, I come into thy blessed will to provide. Jesus, I come.
So to live in what we've been talking about today, the invitation is to do what Jesus asked. And the choice is yours and mine, of course, to take up our cross and follow. And it is a choice that we're given. And so whatever that means for you in your season of life or in an ultimate sense in your relationship with God, I invite you to make this prayer your prayer if you're willing to accept the challenge. And we're going to put it on the screen. It's the prayer of Ignatius of Loyola. It's an old prayer. But that prayer will allow us to hear the call of Christ to take up our cross and follow. And if it doesn't go up on the screen, I'm going to give you the words and invite you to repeat after me, line by line. So let's pray together. Teach us, good Lord. Teach us, good Lord, to serve as you deserve. To serve as you deserve. To give and not to count the cost. To fight and not heed the wounds. To toil and not to seek for rest. To labor and to not ask for any reward. To labor and not ask for any reward. Except that of knowing that we do your will. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.